All right, we're going to start here with the Mishnah and the new Perek on the bottom of Yud Ched Amud Bet. Here, the Mishnah says, Seder Taniyot Elu. This protocol, this procedure that we saw in the previous Perek, Hamurim Birivia Rishona, that are mentioned with regards to the lack of rain, that's only true with regards to the lack of rain. Aval Tzmachim Shishanu, if you have growths or any type of vegetation that has now had difficulty with growing or show signs of deviating from the norms, then matri'in alehem miyad. Then right away we start to cry out, we start to call out to Hashem. V'chein shepasku gishamim ben geshem legeshem. The same is true if there is a gap between the rains of arba'im yom. So even if they had the rain that started, but if there's a gap then between the rains of 40 days, matri'in alehem, then again we call out to Hashem, we start the procedures of the fasting, yipnei shehi makat batzoret, because that's already indications of a drought. Yardu litzmachin, avalo lo yardu li'ilan. If they came down enough for the vegetation, but not for the trees, li'ilan, the rains fell that were good for the trees, avalo litzmachin, but not for the vegetation, lezeh lezeh, they had rains that were good for both the trees and the vegetation, avalo liborot l'shichinu me'arot, not for the cisterns, the caves and the pits. Rashi mentions over here, all of these are water collection devices. They are cisterns of sorts. Matrin alehem miyad. Then again, we start asking for it right away. We do not delay. V'chein ir, shelo yadu aleha gishamim. If you have a city upon which there is no rain, then also we call out right away, dichtiv, imtarti alir achat, v'alir achat lo amtir, chalka achat timater. So we have this mentioned in Amos, that the possibility that there will be certain cities that do get rain and other cities that do not get rain. So when you have a city that in an isolated fashion does not get rain, oto ha'ir mit'aneh u'mitra'at v'chol svivoteha mit'anot v'lo matriot. So that city fasts and calls out in davens v'chol svivoteha, all the suburbs around it, all those that are ancillary to the major city, mit'anot, they fast, v'lo matriot, but they do not do the, whether this is the churot or matriot means that they daven and v'tzakot, they don't do that. So they do a lesser form of what the city does, because in a sense they are dependent on the city. They go in to buy their food and their produce and their supplies from this city, so they are collectively a part of this city. Rabbi Kiva omer, matriot v'lo mitanot. Rabbi Kiva says no, that they call out, they do the churot and they have the tefillot, but they do not fast. It's an interesting machloki between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Kiva. Seems to focus on what's more important in terms of joining in with the tzibur. Is it the fasting that makes you a part of that greater tzibur that's included in the city? Or is it the matriot? Is it the tefillot and the truot that make you a part of that tzibur? Here you have a machloki as to what the focus is for those that are found in the suburbs around this major city. V'chein ir, sheyesh ba dever o mapolet. A city that has some sort of plague, o mapolet, or it has, whether it's an earthquake or a landslide, oto ha'ir mit'aneh u'mitra'at. V'chos v'vada'a mit'anot v'lo matriot. Again, that city itself fasts and obviously calls out to Hashem for the difficulty, the situation in which they find themselves. The suburbs around there, mit'anot v'lo matriot. They participate by fasting, but they are not participants in matriot. Rabbi Kiva again says matriot v'lo mitanot. They do the truot, but again that's tefillah, the sounding of the shofar, but they do not fast. Ezu dever. What is the classification of a plague upon which you start to call out to Hashem? Meaning that the people die of natural causes. People die sometimes of unnatural causes. But when does something be classified as a plague? So it's ir amotziah chamesh meot raglei. So you have a city that contains a population of at least 500, and then three people die in a three-day span. Zeh achar zeh, one after the other, that's already considered to be a plague. That is a number that's beyond the natural death rate that you would expect for that number or that population. So probably if you multiply the population on a ratio basis, you would assume that the number would continue to grow, and that in order to be classified as a plague, as the population grew, you would also need more meitim to be yotzei me'ha city on a regular basis or a sequential basis. Now, the Bach over here eliminates the last line of the Mishnah because it's an obvious response to what the question that was asked before, which was, Hare zed dever, pachomikan ein zed dever. Less than that is not considered a dever. Now, al elu matriin b'chol makom. These are situations upon which you begin to daven, call out to Hashem immediately, no matter where they're found. So even though it's not proximate to the area that you're in, because these are types of traveling problems, then we assume that even though you're not directly involved, you're not the city itself, you're not the suburbs of that city, nevertheless, you get involved right away. Alashida fon, these are the wind blasts that ruin the crops. Valirakon, on the mildew. Valarabe, on locusts. Valchasil, the crickets. Valachaya ra'ah, on wild animals. V'alacherev, and sword, meaning that there are gaisot legions that are coming through there, or marauders that are coming through and killing people. Matrin aleah, everybody fasts and everybody davens upon over these issues. Mipnei shehi makah mehalechet, because it's a mobile type of problem, and therefore even though it's isolated right now to a single area, it can spread quickly to other areas, or it can travel to these other areas. So no one is immune from the problem, and therefore everybody gets involved. There was a case where the Zekenim left Yerushalayim to their cities because Ru Tanit, and they instituted a fast. So they found a small amount of this blast in Ashkelon. Interesting enough, Rashi says over here, Ashkelon is Be'eretz Plishtim, as opposed to the statement before, Sheyardu Zekenim Yerushalayim Nareihem is Be'eretz Yisrael. So they went to their cities in Eretz Yisrael. And even though they saw the Shidafon in Ashkelon, which was Eretz Plishtim, nevertheless, they said that everybody fasts because of this possibility, or the plausibility, that it will spread to the cities within Eretz Yisrael. V'od gazru tanit, ashachlu zevim shtei tigonokot beivar yardein. And they also instituted fasts over the fact that wolves ate two young children in Eivar Yardein. So again, it's in a distinct location geographically that is separate from the core of Eretz Yisrael. Nevertheless, they were gozer taniyot because of this idea that it moves. They travel. This is something that could easily move over into the core of Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Yossi Omer, lo ashachlu elo ashniru. It wasn't an incident in which they actually ate or attacked or killed young children. It was a case that they were seen in the city in places where they're normally not seen. That already was enough of a reason to precipitate a fast by the people in Eretz Yisrael in order to ensure that it doesn't spread further. Al elu matriin b'Shabbat. So now this is a step further, which is what we're talking about here until now is davening, fasting on weekdays. When do you have a dispensation to do this on Shabbat as well? When it comes to Shabbat, you're going to have to talk about two things. One is that it's got to be something extreme. It's got to be something that is more on the scale of severity than normal items. And number two is, it has to be something that is immediately necessary. So here the Mishnah defines for that is, al ir shikifua nachrim. If the city has been laid siege to it by outsiders, by foreigners, and that the city's under attack, that's a reason to first of all daven on Shabbat, and it's a reason to do it immediately, because this is a danger that is proximate and immediate, and it's also something that is on the severity chain, it's on the severity line, is very severe. It's something that's terrible. O Nahar, the other option here is a river that's overflowing its banks, that is exceeding its normal flow, and it's threatening to flood the city. Velasvina, amitarefet b'yam, or a boat that is foundering, or even floundering in the ocean, where it's having difficulty in the ocean, in that case as well, you dive in right away, because these are immediate dangers that need addressing, even on Shabbat. Rabbi Yossi Omer, we saw Rabbi Yossi earlier in the Masechta back on Daf Yudalit, where he says, Le Ezra velo le tzaka. You're allowed to call out for Ezra, but not for tzaka. Rashi over there back in Yudalit gave two interpretations as to what that means. One possibility is Le Ezra means you're allowed to call for reinforcements. You're allowed to call for human reinforcements. Velo le tzaka, you're not allowed to daven. You're not allowed to have public crying out on Shabbat. There Rashi says the reason is that we're not guaranteed to be answered. So why risk the quote-unquote Chilul Shabbat for something that we're not sure is going to work anyway? So So in terms of calling out to others to come and assist us, that you can do. But the tzedakah of the fasting and the matriot, that we don't do. The other explanation Rashi brought over there was that we do not have public tefillot. We only have private tefillot. They have private tefillot, which means that every individual can daven in their house, but we don't gather everybody together in the shul to have a public tefillah, because that's inappropriate on Shabbat. That's Rabbi Yossi's opinion. Right, so obviously there is danger here, but the question is the benefits of crying out to Hashem better or overrides the negative aspect of this, which is the ruining of Shabbat? Meaning that the Shmirat HaShabbat is also a form of protection to the individual because he does what he's supposed to be doing. If we're going to somehow diminish in Shabbat, we only want to do it if we are assured that that's going to have some sort of benefit that exceeds the benefit of keeping Shabbat. So I think that's the way to explain the first opinion in Rashi that he brings back on Yudat Omanav. Shimon HaTemani, Omer. Again, here it's interesting. You would have assumed that Shimon HaTemani means he was from Teman. Rashi over here says, Min Timna Haya. That he was from the place called Timna, which we find by Sefer Shoftim, by Shimshon, by Timna, is found there. That's found in the southwest of Eretz Yisrael, not Teman, like the country south of Eretz Yisrael. So Rashi calls it Timna instead of Teman, which is interesting. He says, Shimon HaTemani Omer Af Ala Dever. The Dever is included in this category of severe, immediate issues where you can even call out on Shabbat. The Chachamim don't agree with that, and therefore there's not reason to call out or to gather together for tefillot on Shabbat. Al kol tzara shelo tavo la tzibur matrin aleihem chutz mirov gishamim. Then you can, for any difficulty, you get the tzibur together, and we call for fast days, we call for tefillot, except the only exception to that rule is too much rain. So what we call too much bracha, it's too good for that. We don't get together and say we're not going to ask for more. We don't daven to Hashem to stop it. Even though it's difficult and even though it's something that is actually at this point detrimental, nevertheless, we don't ask for that to be stopped and we don't gather together in tefillot to have that be stopped. We're going to see here in the Mishnah that there was a Mesora that we don't daven on these issues. Maset, Shamru lo l'choni amagal. They spoke to Choni amagal, which we'll see why he's called this in a second. Hitfalel, shirdu gishamim. They asked them to daven that rain should come down. Amar lahem, zu v'ichnisu tanurei psachim. Go outside and take in all your ovens for Pesach. The ovens for Pesach were first of all kept outside, and number two, they were made out of cheres. They were made out of clay, and therefore the rain would cause them to be damaged or destroyed. So he basically tells them, go take them in because it's going to rain. Yishvo shelo yimoku. So they won't dissolve, they won't be ruined. Hitvalel, he davens, v'lo yardu gishamim. And the rain did not fall. Masa, so what does he do now? Obviously, they were used to going to Choni HaMagal to ask him to pray for rain. And he obviously believed that he also was going to be successful because he tells them to take their things in because it's going to rain. But didn't work this time. So Masa, what does he do? Ag Uga, he basically creates a circle or some sort of perimeter around himself. Vamad Betucha, he stands inside of it. Vamar Lefanav, Ribono Shalalam. Banecha Samu Pnehem Alai. Your children have put their faith in me. Shani k'ben bayit lefanecha, because I am like a regular in front of you. I'm someone that is a trusted servant in your house. Nishba ani b'shimcha gadol. I take a shvuah by your name, your great name. Shani zaz mikan. I'm not going to leave this location. Ad shetirachem al banecha, until you have mercy on your children and you provide rain. Hitchilu gishamim minatfim. So the rain starts to drip or drizzle. Amar lo kach sha'alti. That's not what I asked for. Ela gishmei borot shechemu me'arot. I asked for rain, and I meant full rain. Rain that's going to satisfy the drought. Rain that's going to replenish the water supply. Hitchilo le'red b'zaf. They started to come down torrentially. Amar lo kach sha'alti. Again, he says, that's not what I asked for. Ela gishmei ratzon bracha unidava. I ask for rain that comes down, that will be pleasing, it'll be a blessing, and something that is positive. I'm asking for generosity in the rain, something that comes down as a bracha, and not to our detriment. Yardu kitikunan. And that's what happens, the rain comes down as they should. Ad, sheyatzu Yisrael mirushalayim, The people in the low-lying areas of Yerushalayim had to leave because their water was starting to flood in those areas. The Har HaBayit. They went to Har HaBayit. Har HaBayit is the highest point in the area. So they go up to Har HaBayit in order to escape the floods, escape the rain. Bnei HaGshamim. Bo v'amru lo. Okay, shem sheitpalalta lehem sheyardu, kach hitpalel sheyolchu lehen. So they came to him and said, listen, you were very successful at getting the rain. Now you got to have another tefillah to stop the rain because it's just too much now. Amr lehem, tzuru im nimchet even ha-to'im or to'ein. Go out and see if this stone was covered in rain. As Rashi explains over here, even ha-to'im is mentioned in the Gemara in Bava Metzia. It was a specific location within Yerushalayim where they had a high platform or post where anybody who lost something would go to find their lost and found, and anybody who found something would go there to announce it. So it was a clearinghouse for lost items in this location, but it had a high point on it, this Even HaTo'ein, on which people stood to announce things or they placed things so people could see them. So once he says, go out and see if the rains have reached above that level. And if they reached above that level, then he was willing to daven to stop the rain. Shalach lo Shimon ben Shetach, imalei choniata, gozrani alecha nidui. If it was not for the fact that you were choni, I would put you into excommunication. Now he excommunicated him because of what's called kavod harav. He spoke in a manner that wasn't appropriate towards Hashem. He's making demands of Hashem. He's saying, I don't want this, I don't want that, I want it this way, I want it that way. But in the end, he says, I can't put you into nidui, because guess what? They listened to you. Hashem listens to you, so then what can I do? How can I do or protect Hashem's honor when they're actually responding to you? You plead before Hashem, and he does what you ask for. Like a child who begs from his father, and he responds to him, and he does what he asks for. Upon you, the Pasuk in Mishlei says, Ismach avicha v'imecha. Your mother and your father should be glad. Vitagel yoladetecha. And the one that bore you should rejoice. Meaning that he's an exceptional individual, and therefore, even though his behavior might not be becoming of others, but because of his position, his stature within the world of tefillah, and his ability to communicate with Hashem, there's not much you can say except, wow, this is an amazing person. Hayu mitanim. What happens if they begin to fast? And the rain starts to come down. So now, kodem netzach hama, if it starts before sunrise, lo yashlimu, then they don't finish off the fast day. Lachar netzach hama, after sunrise, yashlimu, then they do finish off the day. But Lazar omer, kodem chatzot lo yashlimu, if it's before noontime, they don't finish off the fast. Lachar chatzot, if it's already afternoon, yashlimu, then they finish off the fast. The question is, what is the threshold by which you're determined already to be deep into the fast? So you should finish it versus something where you've only started out the fast and you can opt out of it. Maseh shegazru tanit v'lod, they instituted tanit in Lod, v'yardu lehem gishamim, kodem chatzot, and it rained before noontime. Amar lehem Rabbi Tarfon, tzu v'achlu ushtu v'asu yom tov. Go ahead, eat, drink, and make it into a holiday, into a celebration. V'yatzu v'achlu v'shatu v'asu yom tov. They did exactly that. Ubal ben Arvaim, and then they returned in the afternoon, v'karu Halel HaGadol. And then they said Halel HaGadol to praise Hashem for the rain that they got. And it seems to be here, and Rashi notes said that part of the reason that they went back in to eat, drink, and to make it into Yom Tov is because when you say Halel, it has to mean Bitoch Simcha. So the only way to do it Bitoch Simcha, it can't be when you are fasting. They first had to eat, drink, and then be merry, and then return to say Halel HaGadol to be in the right frame of mind in order to say Halel HaGadol. So the premise, or the prerequisite for Halel HaGadol was the eating and the drinking and the rejoicing, and that's what led them into Halel HaGadol. Now there is a Machloket HaRishonim here as to how broadly applicable is this. Is this only applicable to rain? This is a unique standing with rain that you can cut off the fast halfway through the day, but by other tzarot, it would not be true. Other tzarot, you have to finish up the fast. Or is this a general principle that anytime you have a fast day, where you are doing it for a specific purpose, then if the purpose is accomplished or failed, meaning that can go either way, then you don't have to finish off the fast. So that's the first Machloket HaRishonim. There are others that say that this is uniquely connected to public fasts, because in public fasts, baked in, embeds in the fast, a Tanai. The Tanai is the reason for the fast. On the other hand, if an individual fasts for whatever reason, even if it's not accomplished, or even if it is accomplished, they still have to finish off the fast because they don't have that built-in t'nai to a built-in t'nai to their fasting. And again, others say that this is unique terrain because of the aspect of Halel HaGadol, that the proper response to rain is Halel. And therefore, only by rain, where you would say Halel HaGadol, do we stop fasting in order to facilitate the saying of Halel HaGadol. But by other tzarot, where you're not going to say Halel HaGadol, then you wouldn't stop fasting because there's no necessity, meaning that you're not going to say Halel HaGadol, so you don't have to stop fasting. And still, others like the Raifud believe that by rain, once it rains, the problem is gone. Whereas by other tzarot, even if the tzarah seems to have dissipated or disappeared, it still can reappear. Whereas once it's rained, the drought is over and it doesn't come back. Others argue on the Raifud and say that's just not true. It can rain and then you can have a problem after it rains if it doesn't rain enough in the subsequent days or subsequent weeks. But those are the differences of opinion with regards to whether this has broad application. This is only uniquely applicable to the issues of rain. Again, the halacha, it's really a big machloket in the achronim, and the Mishnah Berurah is reluctant to machriya. He says that definitely talmidei chachamim who want to continue to fast in these situations should fast. Individuals who are fasting should fast through to the end. And then he says, even seems to be that even for taniyot zibur, that people should finish off the fast day like they're supposed to. A lot of it has to do with Rashi. Earlier on in the Masechta, Rashi says the reason to finish off the fast is so it doesn't make it look like we are basically blackmailing Hashem and saying, well, if you do what we want, we'll stop the fast. If you don't do what we want, we're going to continue fasting. Basically, we're threatening Hashem with the fast, and you don't want it to look like that. You want it to look like we're going to fast no matter what happens. That means whether it turns out to be the good, turns out to be the bad, no matter what the outcome is, you want to finish the fast because you don't want to make it look like you're making a t'nai or blackmailing Hashem in any way. All right, now the Gemara asks a very interesting question, which is the way the Mishnah starts. The Mishnah starts, Seder Taniyot Elu Hamurin B'Rivia Rishona. This procedure or protocol that we saw in the previous parak that has to do with the Rivia Rishona, the first rains. Wait a minute. What do you mean, in the first rains? V'Rimini Rivia Rishona Ushnia Lish'ol Shushit Le'itanot. We saw this in the first parak, that what are the different riviot, the sections of time for rain? There was a Rivia Rishona, the first rain, second rain, third rain. Where I want to know, what's the significance of those rains? Rivia Rishona, the significance was, that's when we begin to ask for rain. The last of the rains, Rivia Shlishit, was Le'itanot. That's when you start fasting. The fast days only go into effect on the third one. And then the middle one, we had a disagreement amongst the Amoraim as to what that was for. And we concluded, in the end, that was for Nidarim. So when, if somebody says a neder until the rainy season, what is considered to be the rainy season? That's the second Rivia. Well, if the third Rivia is when you begin to fast, why does our mission over here say, Seder Taniyot Elu Amurot B'Rivia Rishona, that these fast days that begin with the first rains? They don't begin with the first rains, they begin with the third rains. So Amar Yehuda Achikamar, this is how you have to read the Mishnah. Seder Taniyot Amur, those procedures, protocol that we saw in the previous parak, Eimatai, when is that? Bizmach Yatsa Rivia Rishona Shnei V'Shlishit, once the beginning of the rainy season has passed without any results, v'lo yardu gishamim, and we haven't seen any rain, aval yardu gishamim b'rivia rishona. Whereas, if you had rain that came in the first rain, v'zaru v'lo tzamchu, and then they planted, but nothing grew, inami tzamchu v'chazru v'nishtanu, or it grew, and then it changed its appearance, meaning that it's not on the regular course of growth, matrina le'em miyad, then you blow on them immediately. So he reconstructs the beginning of the Mishnah to say, look, there are two different situations. There's a situation in which there's no rain at all. That's where you fast. And there are other situations, even when it did rain, that you still have reasons that you're going to fast. And that's because even though it rained, it's not turning out exactly the way what we thought. But those, we go right into fast. We fast. So as soon as we have signs of that happening, we begin to fast and we begin to daven immediately. Whereas by the rain, you wait until the Reviyash Lishit, until the three time periods have passed by and we haven't seen any rain. And only then do you begin that. That's one. Number two is, procedurally, then you begin with the three lighter fasts, then you move into the three more extreme fasts, and then you move into the seven of the most extreme types of fasts. On the other hand, here, when we talk about miyad in these fast days, means they skip to the seven fasts at the end, which have everything in them, all the trappings of the fast. It means 24 hours. Chamesh Yadayim Nuim, Matriin. All those things that we talked about in the seven latter fast days, not opening the businesses, those apply. When we go out Matriin Yad in the Mishnah, that means we do that right away. We jump to the latter fast of the rainy season. So again, the protocol that was laid out in the previous perek was all associated with the rain and the lack of rain. And it follows, we keep fasting as it gets to more and more severe. I mean, the drought gets more severe, we continue to fast, and the fast get more severe. Whereas by these other issues where we say right away, it means we jump to the latter fast because the situation is severe and the situation needs attention immediately. Amar of Nachman, Davka Nishtanu. That's only true if they changed from their normal growth patterns or their normal look. Aval Yavshu lo. But if they dry out, that's not the case. It says, Pshita, that's what the Mishnah says. Nishtanutanan, it says if they changed. If there's something unusual about them, that's what precipitates or triggers the need for fasting. The Mishnah says, Lo, Tzricha, that we do need this because of the Akun, the possibility that they did something. Rashi is going to give us two explanations as to what Akun does. So now, one possibility, Rashi says, is the Akun. Shalubi kaneh, shenitkanu, nitaknu me'at. The case where they dried out, and then they began to show some signs of life by the stalk. The stalk starts to emerge or come out even after they've dried out. So that's one possibility what it is. Rashi in the second possibility, it says, Takun min shalu bikaneh, that they came out. Their stalk already rose, so we think that the possibility that the stalk growing already indicates that they are far enough along that even if they're drying out, that's not permanent damage to the item. Therefore, we would have thought, Maudutema akanta miltahi, the fact that either the stalk has begun to show signs of life, or they've already have a stalk so that it's far enough along, that that's enough of a reason to say that there's hope for these items. Kamash Malan, that there's no hope. Now, this is very interesting. What's the problem by Yabshu? What's the problem when they dry out? Rashi says that when you have dried out objects, it's a tefillah shav. It's a worthless tefillah. It's over. And you can't daven when it's over. The important factor that people have to know in tefillot, which is that you're only allowed to daven, the Gemara says in Brachot, for something where there's hope that this can happen. Now, hope means that there's a decent chance that it will happen. If it's a 99.9 to, 0.1 odds, then davening in that case might be a tefillat shav. You're not allowed to daven for a miracle, number one. And number two is, you're not allowed to daven for something that's already done. When it's over already, you can't daven. That's considered to be a tefillat shav. That's what Rashi notes over here, that this is classified as a tefillat shav, because Yabshu, once they're dried out, there's no hope for these items. They're not coming back to life. And if you're davening for them to come back to life, you're asking for a miracle, or it's a tefillat shav. You take your choice, and neither one of those are permitted in terms of a tefillah. That's important just in terms of measuring when to daven and what to daven for. This is important considerations, that it has to be something that has potential to happen within the normal course. And number two is, it has to be something that's not already done. It has to be something that's not over and concluded already. Now, the Gemara continues now. V'chein pasku g'shamim ben geshem l'geshem. My makat batzoret. One is a drought. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amarav, makat amiviyah lidei batzoret. It's a difficulty that leads into a batzoret. Amar Rav Nachman explains, Nara anaharo batzorta. Whereas, Medinta, medinta, kafno. Right, so now, first, we have in the Mishnah, it says that if you have this gapping in the rain, that that's called a bitzorah, that's called a drought. So now, the way that Rav Yehuda Amarav explained it is, that's not a drought right away. You had rain already, and now you have a gap in the rain. You're not at a drought immediately, but he says rather it's a makah, something that will lead to a drought when you have that type of gapping between the rains, and that seriously raises issues at the possibility of a drought down the road. That's one possibility. Rav Nachman says, that it has to do with the nature of the problem. So now, Nara Nara, Rashi, Tosafot both bring two explanations, the similar explanations. One is Nara Nara, which means that if you are unable to get food or water in the areas that you're in, but there is transportation on the rivers to bring the food to you, that's considered to be a batzoret. That's a drought. You don't have food, but you can get the food shipped in pretty easily on the rivers. That's called a drought. On the other hand, amedinta, amedinta, if you're unable to ship it on the rivers and you have to transport it ala chamorim, you have to transport it over land, that is a kafna, that's a famine already. So there's a batzoret is something where you can get the food there pretty easily from other locations. A kafna, famine, is where it's very difficult to get it there. You have to transport it over land versus over the river. That's one explanation. The other explanation is it has to do with one river dried up. And there's another river that feeds the city. So if you have one river dried up and the other river feeds the city, or you just have to wait longer for that river to fill up from the other rivers, that's called a batzoret. That's called a drought. The other one is Medinta Medinta. All the rivers in this area have dried up, and there's nothing coming into this area, but other areas have water or rivers that are going into them. That's called a kaftan. That's called a famine. Now, it's not clear from the Gemara what they're after, because in our Mishnah, it says that you only fast for a batzoret. So there are, like Tosafot Rishonim, that believe here, the Gemara is saying, that for the first type of batzoret, you don't fast, because that is something that is surmountable. It's something that you can overcome. It's something that you can deal with. What the batzoret that we're talking about in the Mishnah is a batzoret that looks like it will lead to a kafna, that will lead to a famine. It's a batzoret that is the precipitator of a famine, that it looks like it's going in that direction. That's the time when we fast, because that's going to get into a very serious situation. And a situation of a kafna, then you really need to be fasting and davening. So you have to assess what type of batzoret you have. Do you have a batzoret that's going to remain at a level of batzoret? That's okay. We'll manage through that. A batzoret that's going to lead into a kafna, that already you have to deal with up front, even when it is a batzoret. V'amar Rabbi Chanina, sa'a b'sela, which is very expensive. If you can buy a sa'a, which is a volumetric measure, b'sela, which is a large coin, if that is the price, it's about four times the normal price. So then, if you have a sa'a b'sela v'shchicha, but you can find it, it's expensive. Food is very expensive, but it's able to be shipped here, and you have it, there's plenty of food, just at the higher price, then batzorta. That's considered to be a drought. Arba'a sa'a b'sela, you get four sa'a b'sela, which is very cheap, or the normal price for it. Velo shchicha, but you can't find an ounce of food. I mean that the price is in a normal range, it's just that there's nobody there to sell it. Kafna, that's a famine. Now this is somewhat difficult, just from basics of economics, because if it's difficult to find it, there's no way that the price is going to stay at the lower price, versus if the price is high, then obviously you're going to bring more produce into the area. So it's somewhat difficult to explain, but he says if the problem is the high prices, that's a batzoret. If the problem is the lack of food, I don't know if the price is really that low, it's just that the price doesn't matter, it's just there's no produce, there's no supply, then that's called a kafna, that's called a famine. So the price doesn't matter, I think. That's what he's saying. We could have the cheapest prices, it just doesn't matter because you can't get anything there. That's obvious. If there's no supply, the price is going to be high. But he's saying that the price is irrelevant because there's no supply, and I think that's what he means in that case. I'm Rabbi Yochanan. Lo shanu ala b'zman shama'ot b'zol. That's only true if people have money to spend. Uperot b'yoker, and the price is high. Ava ma'ot b'yoker, if it's difficult to make a parnosa, uperot b'zol, there's plenty of produce, just as nobody has any money to pay for it, then matrin alei miyad. Then you start davening right away because that's a serious issue. Dam Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan says, I'll tell you why I know this. Nehirna, I remember from when I was a youngster. Kadhavu kaime dalatzein besela. I remember when I was a youngster that the prices remained low. Vavi nefiche nefiche kafan b'Tveria, and there were many people swollen from famine in Tveria mitalei tisar because they didn't have money to spend and there was no parnosa available. There was plenty of produce. There just was no, people didn't have parnosa. The economic situation was difficult and they didn't have the ability to pay for or to buy the food that they needed. And therefore it ended up being a famine, not because of a lack of food, but because of a lack of parnosa. So there are two ways to have a problem. There's a problem when you have a lack of supply. There's a problem when you have a lack of parnosa to buy that supply that's there. Both of those are problematic. If it's simply high prices, that is not enough of a reason to be considered a famine. That's considered to be a batzoret, and that's less of an issue. Because, yes, you have to pay more for it, but at least it's available. If it's available and it's a higher price, that's a more temporary problem. It's not a permanent problem. It's not going to lead to a famine. People are going to eat. They may have to eat a little less. They might have to pay a little more. But in the end, they're going to have food. In the Mishnah, it says, if the rain came down for the vegetation, for the tvuah, but not for the trees, then again, we dive in right away. Bishlam alitzmachim velo li'ilan. What is the situation in which the rain fell and it was beneficial for the tevuah and for the vegetation, velo li'ilan, but it was no good for the tree? That is Mishkachala da Atya Necha Velo Atya Razio. That's when he came in a gentle rain, but it did not come in the heavy rains. We saw this in the first parak, that the gentle rains are good for the vegetation and the tefuah. The heavy rains are good for the trees. So that will be, again, the case where that will be true is when you have gentle rains and not heavy rains. Razia le'ilan velo litzmachim, a case where you have it for trees and not for vegetation. What's that situation? The atya razia velo atya necha. Case we have heavy rains but no light rains. So that'll be beneficial for the trees, not for the vegetation. You have sufficient or good rain for all the growth, meaning for the trees and for the vegetation, but not to replenish the water supply. You have heavy rains, and you have light rains or gentle rains. You just didn't get a lot of it. You didn't get exceptional amounts of it that it replenishes the cisterns. Okay, I can explain all of those three permutations in the Mishnah. But there's a fourth permutation, which I cannot explain, which is the case where Yardu leborot, leshichim leMarot, a case where it comes down for the water supply, avololo zeh, avololo zeh, but it doesn't supply for the trees and for the vegetation. How do you have rains that are sufficient to replenish the water supply, yet they're not good enough for the trees and the vegetation or the tefuah that's out there? Hechemishkachala, what's that case? The atya bishfichuta. The case where it comes down torrentially. It's pouring with rain. The rains are so heavy that they replenish the water supply, but they're detrimental for the trees and they're detrimental for the vegetation that was there. They're gonna flood the fields. They're gonna wash away the seeds. They're gonna destroy the trees. And you can have rains of that effect or that power that are too much for the trees and too much for the vegetation, yet they'll replenish the water supply. So there is such a situation like that. Tarnabanan, Matrin Ali Note Beprusa Pesach, we daven for the trees, even Prusa Pesach means halfway through the Pesach, when it means during the holiday of Pesach, because that's the time when you would expect the trees to start to bud. I mean, that's the time when we make Birkata Ilanot, that's where you expect the fruits to start to emerge. So if you're running into trouble with rain, then that you daven right away for the trees at that point in time. Aborot Vishichim Me'arot, when it comes to the replenishing the water supply, afilu prusachag, that you do even in the middle of Sukkot, in the very early on, because that is a problem that is immediately dangerous. It's something that needs to be addressed in a very timely fashion, and therefore we start to daven immediately for these problems, because otherwise you're not going to have a water supply be replenished at that point in time, and that's extremely dangerous. Yeah, we stopped asking for rain for the other items, but for the trees, you can continue to ask where you can daven. It's the Mishnah early on says that rain is okay till the end of Nisan. Even though we stop asking for rain by the beginning of Pesach, the rains are not considered to be a klala until after Nisan has passed. So here in a situation where there's difficulty even post the time that we're asking for rain in a normal season, we would engage Hashem or we would daven for rain for the trees because it's still a time where it would be beneficial for the trees, even though we've stopped asking already for rain in a more general or generic sense. Pros of Pesach, sometimes the word pros means half, and sometimes the word pros means 2 weeks, because it's half a month. So pros of Pesach could be 2 weeks prior to Pesach, which would be Rosh Chodesh. That happens to come up in the situation where they're talking about when do you start learning the halachot of Pesach. Do you start from the month before, or do you start from pros of Pesach? Do you start from 2 weeks before learning the halachot of Pesach? So it could refer to Rosh Chodesh Nisan, and that would be before this month that we stop asking for rain. But again, I think throughout the month of Nisan, I think it's still relevant to ask for rain for the trees. Even though, again, in the more generic sense, you don't need rain for the tefuah, you don't need rain for the other items. Again, every time we look at these situations, we're looking at a cost-benefit analysis, which is normally we'll say we'll wait for the rain till after Sukkot has passed, because during Sukkot, it would be a klalah. It would be detrimental for us to get rain. We'd have to leave the sukkah. It's something that's negative. So we don't want it to rain during Sukkot. But that's if we can wait. In a situation where there's no water and there's a drought and they're going to run themselves into a problem, then already the benefit of getting rain at that point outweigh the detriment or the deficit that would come from having rain during Sukkot. And therefore, that is what the Gemara is saying over here. In that situation, we begin to ask for rain, even though normally we wouldn't ask for rain. I think that's the interesting part about both of these. But these situations are times when you normally would not ask for rain. We allow you to ask for rain because of the circumstances that are there. And the circumstances outweigh the negatives of not asking for rain in those situations. V'al kulam, ein lehem maim lishtot. In all of these cases, we have nothing to drink. Matrina lehem miyad. Then we go right away. All right. So that's why, if you look before, the way we read it in the Gemara, it made it sound like the Barot Shechim Marot means that the water supply is not there. The way Rashi defines Barot Shechim Marot is that they don't have Lashkot Zerim Ved Behem Dam. They don't have enough water to water the fields and their animals, but there's still water available to humans. Whereas this case will be a case when there is Ein Maim Lishtot. The other possibility is, you know, the other section before was a case where they didn't have water for, not for the Marot, but rather they didn't have water for their vegetation. And that's the other possibility of the Girsa in that piece before. But in a situation where there's no water and they're in trouble with their water supply, then you do it right away. Vezu miyad. Shalahen. What is the miyad that we talk about here all these times? We say immediately you start to fast. Immediately you go to the latter seven fasts. What does immediately mean? Sheni v'chamishi v'sheni. It means you wait for a Monday, Thursday, Monday. That's what an immediate fast means. It means the next Monday you start a sequence of fasts that are Monday, Thursday, Monday. Vial. In all these cases, you only daven and set up the fast days in their province, meaning that in the locale that are affected by these items. So that machut, or that country, or that area where they need the rain, that's where they daven. We don't make it a global type of tanit. It's a tanit for those locales or regions that need it. How you define a region, we spoke about this earlier in the Masechta, the Shuta Rosh talks about what is classified as a region or a large area or a large tract. It's not just a city, it's not just a small locale. It means large areas, large geographically connected or similar types of areas. That's called an aparchia. But askar, when it comes to askara, when it comes to krup, bizman sheish b'mita, when it's deathly, when it is dangerous, then we dive in and we fast on it. Bizman shein ba mita, where people's throats are swelling up, but it's not causing death, in that case, ain matrin aleha. Then they don't dive in and don't fast on it. Umatrin ala guvai b'koshu. When it comes to locust, any sign of locust, you go right away to a fast day and to davening. Shimon alazo mer afala chagav, even on the grasshoppers. As Rashi notes over here, that when it comes to locusts, they're not normally found. And if you find a little bit, that's just a sign that a lot more is coming up behind them. And then you should be worried. And that's why even for the smallest amount, you get worried. On the other hand, grasshoppers, there is a normal amount of grasshoppers that do exist and that do fly around. And therefore, just a small amount isn't necessarily considered to be a problem. It could be just normal. And that's where B'Shimon Lazar says, no, let's just be careful. Precaution. We don't even want to take chances with that. Tanakama says, no, Chagav, these grasshoppers are normal, and therefore, unless you get a more serious type of infestation, we're not going to fast for them. Tanrabanan, Matrin ala lilanot bishar shnei shavua. When it comes to the Shemitah cycle, for the 6 years in which you do plant during the Shemitah cycle, then you fast and you set up these days to daven when you are relevant. When's that relevant? That's during the 6 years that you're allowed to work the field. So for the trees, you do it for all those 6 years. Alabarot, valashichim, valamiarot, afilub shvit. It's to replenish the water supply or the water cisterns. You do that even shvit because that's relevant in shvit. Even though it will be beneficial to the ground as well. But nevertheless, the more important thing is that we need to replenish the water supply and therefore we dive in even on shvit for that. Shimwalamir, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Omer, afali lanot bishvit. We even dive in and we set up fast days, but it hasn't rained for the trees during Shvit. Because the poor people depend on that for their sustenance. In a regular year, you have the matanot aniyim that come out of the normal harvest, and that's what aniyim get. During Shvit, where there's no normal harvest and there's no normal matanot aniyim, the matanot aniyim are the fact that the fields are half-care and they can go in and pick fruits off the trees and take what they need. So now, in a situation where you have a drought or you have a problem with rain and the trees aren't going to grow fruit normally, that's a problem for the aniyim. They have nowhere to go. They have nowhere to get their food. And therefore, we tell them we fast and we daven for the benefit of those aniyim. Now, what's interesting here is the Tosafot points out, Perish, Haim, Hasvichim, Ayotzim, Mehem. That's the aftergrowth of the trees. I mean, these aren't trees that are worked. Trees produce fruit every year. So those fruits are kadosh b'kedushat shvi'it, and the Aniyim can take them. That's what we're talking about here. Tzarech l'mod de'savar k'man damar tzvichei zra'im asur. Has to be according to one who says that the aftergrowths of tvuah, or the aftergrowths of vegetables in the field, are asurim on shvi'it, and therefore we don't daven for those, because otherwise we would daven for those as well, because the Aniyim can eat them. But the fact that tzvichim are asurim b'shvi'it, therefore we don't daven. That's how Tosafot explains this. Whereas Rashi says, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, Matrin al Ilanot, V'af al ha-svichim, and also on the Svichim. Rashi seems to indicate that this is equally applicable to Svichim outside of Ilanot. So I don't know if Rashi is thinking this is according to the opinion who says that Svichim are Mutarim, or what exactly Rashi has in mind here, but it's interesting. Rashi thinks it applies to Svichim as well, after growth as well. But as Tosafot said, it only applies to things that are Mutar for the Aniyim to take. So Tani Yidach, we have another Braita, Matrin al Ilanot, Bishar Shnei Shavua, Alabarot, Alashichim, Alamarot, Afilu Bishviit. Shimon Gamliel Omer, Afali Lenot, Matrin Alasvichim, Bishviit, Beshishben Parnasa Leanim. So here, again, here you have Ali Lenot, Matrin Alasvichim. So here, that means that either this is separate, that Svichim, this Braita means that not only Lenot, but also Svichim, and here Svichim is the aftergrowth, according to one who says Mutar. Or, these are the svichim of the ilanot, as Tosfot explained before, and that's what this aftergrowth that we're speaking about over here. Tanya, Amar Rabbi Lazar ben Perato, Miyom Shecharab Beit HaMikdash, Nasu Gishamim Tzimukim Leolam. From the time period after the Churban HaBayit, the rain that comes down to the world is like raisins. Tzimukim means dried out, or dried up. I mean that we don't get rain on a regular basis, and we don't get it with a shefa and bracha. Yesh shana shegishmeh mirubim. You have years when you get a lot of rain. Yesh shana shegishmeh mu'atim. And there are years where you get a little rain. Yesh shana shegishmeh yordim bizmanan. There are times when the rain falls when it's supposed to fall. Yesh shana shegishmeh yordim bizmanam. And there are years where it doesn't fall when it's supposed to come down. Shana shegishmeh yordim bizmanam. When the geshemim come in their proper time, the mahu domeh. What is that like? It's like a servant who his master gave him all the stuff to work with on Sunday. Then he's able to bake the stuff properly. It's eaten properly. Now, there's another girsa here in the Gemara, which is that he gives him all the food for the entire week. It's not just for he's preparing for Shabbat. Rather, he's preparing for the entire week. But if he gives him the food in the beginning of the week, then he has time to get everything together, and slowly he puts it together through the week. Shanash engishamei yordim bizmanam. In a case where the rain does not come down in its proper time, the mahu domeh. What is that similar to? Le'eved shenatan lo robo parnasato be'erev Shabbat. But he only just gives it to him right before Shabbat. Nimtzei tisan efeid shelo ketikna. That means that it's not baked properly. V'nechelet shelo ketikna. And obviously, if it's not baked properly, it's not going to be eaten in a way that is proper, because you're just not going to get a good outcome here. So the more time and the timely manner that you get it, the better the outcome. So the same thing with the rain. If it comes on time, the better the outcome. When it doesn't come on time, less beneficial it is, and more likely that the outcome will not be what you expected. Shanasha gishmei amirubim, in a year where the rain is plenty, lemahu domet. What is that similar to? Le'eved shenatan lo rabo parnasato bevat achat. It's a case where his master gave him his food for the entire year. Nimtzu rechaim tochanot min akur, mash tochanot min akav. Because the mill eats up from a large quantity as much as it eats up from a small quantity. V'nimtzeit isa uchelet min akur, k'mosho uchelet min akav. And same thing in the kneading trough. The kneading trough eats up from a large quantity as much as it eats up from a small quantity. What they are suggesting over here is that there is a natural loss. When you mill items, there's a natural loss of materials that get caught in the cracks of the mill and different parts of the mill. There are parts that just don't come out. Same thing when you knead. When you knead in the trough, there's a certain amount of loss that is expected. That loss is not proportional to the size of what you're working in. There is a fixed loss that is true by a milling process, and there's a fixed loss which is true by a kneading process. So therefore, no matter how much you put in there, you're going to end up with that loss. So if you give a person a small amount at a time, they're going to have to keep doing it again, and every time they go in there, they're going to suffer that same loss, that fixed loss, every time they go in there. So it's going to be accumulatively a much larger loss. On the other hand, if you give them a large quantity to do all at once, they're only going to experience that loss once, because from that moment, they'll have a loss from the time they mill, but then everything's done. And since everything's done, they'll never have to experience that loss again. So that's the mashal and the nimshal here, which is when it rains a lot, then there's nothing to worry about. The plenty of rain comes, then the rain goes into the cracks. The rain goes into this area, that area. It's plenty of rain for all those items that are not beneficial, as well as items that are beneficial. The loss of rain won't impact. On the other hand, when a case of shanash gishmeh mu'atim, when you have a light rain year, then lamahu domeh, what is that similar to? Levitch natan lo bravo parnasato ma'at mat. He gives it to him portion by portion. Nimtzu rechayim, mashu tochanot min agur, tochanot min akav. So then again here, his losses are going to be multiplied because every time he goes in, he's going to have that fixed loss of what goes into the mill. Same thing with the kneading trough. Every time he goes into the kneading trough, he's going to have that loss, even though he's using the same amount in total, but because he does it in separate entities or separate times, each time he's going to suffer that fixed loss, and therefore it's much worse. Similar to the rain. When you have very small amounts of rain, each time it comes down, the rain just fills in the cracks, fills in the surface, but never soaks in. Until you get a lot of rain, it's not going to make a difference. So if you get a lot of rain, then it makes a difference. You get little rain at a time. Each time, you lose a lot of the first part of the rain because it gets absorbed by items that are not beneficial to you. It's like someone who's mixing cement. If he has a lot of water, the water doesn't run out, and the plaster and the cement is mixed very nicely. On the other hand, if he has scarcity of water, he runs out of water, and then the cement isn't mixed properly because it's dried out. It's not a good mixture of cement. Again, when you have lots of water, lots of rain, there's plenty of opportunity for the rain to spread out and to fill all the areas that need it and don't need it and keep it growing. On the other hand, when you have small amounts of rain, then you have issues because that small amount of rain gets eaten up or doesn't suffice for the necessities that you have. All right, Tanur Rabbanan, we now have a story here. This is a very famous story. Story carries over into the next Amud, deep into the next Amud. It moves pretty quickly, so we're going to try to do it now, but it's a very famous story, one that many people know already. Tanur Rabbanan. Everybody went up Aliyah LeRegel to Yerushalayim, v'lo haya lehem mayim lishtot, and they didn't have water to drink. Halach Nakdimon ben Gurion. Nakdimon ben Gurion is a very famous resident of Yerushalayim. He's mentioned in the Gemara in Gittin, Adaf Nun Vav Amud Aleph. There the Gemara says that there were three rich people inside of Yerushalayim, and they could have supported Yerushalayim for like 7 years with all the supplies that they had there. And they could have withheld or withstood the siege of Yerushalayim. The Gemara there says that the Bayonim come and burn down all the supply houses in order to force a confrontation between the Romans and the people of Yerushalayim. Now, Dimon ben Gurion is one of that trio of wealthy individuals that is found in Yerushalayim. In addition, the Gemara in Ketubot talks about his daughter. Talks about his daughter's ketubah, the size of his daughter's ketubah, and how amazing amount of money that was pledged both by her father, as well as by her father-in-law, towards the marriage. Then unbelievable sums of money. Over here, the Gemara Ketubot talks about, this is post-Korban, that Rabbi Yochanan sees her outside of Yerushalayim collecting barley seeds from the dung of donkeys. And he says, oh my gosh, I remember your Ketubah, I remember your wedding, I remember everything, and I can't believe what's happened to Klal Yisrael. They're either on the top or on the bottom. And here at the bottom, they're at the bottom of the barrel. Over there, he asks her, what happened to all the money of your father's house? What happened to it? She said, it's all gone. Why is it all gone? She says a parable or mashal that salt makes things stay, which is a lashon of, if you spend your money and give it away to tzedakah, that is the best preservative for it. So she basically implied that her father's house did not do enough chesed with their money, and therefore they were punished by losing all their money. The Gemara in Ketubot says, what are you talking about? Nakdimon Gurion was, and this story we'll see as well, was a big Baal Tzedakah. The Gemara answers in the end, it gives two reasons. One it says is that when he gave Tzedakah and he did some of the things, they were for his personal honor, and therefore it doesn't count. It wasn't as good as it could have been. Or, possibility is that he could have done more. Even though he was giving a lot, he was so wealthy, he could have done more, and therefore he was held accountable for that, and they lost all their money. By the way, it's a big responsibility, which is that when one has the ability to give, that they have to, number one, give generously, and they have to give in a way that is not for their kavod, but rather for the benefit of those recipients that do get the tzedakah that they get. So then, Alach Nadim Agaryon Etzel Adon Echad, he went to this individual, Amar Lo, Hilvani Shtemisrei Mayanot Mayim, lend me 12 springs of water. The way Rashi explains it is these were slow-filling springs, so the springs were not sufficient to supply the water in there. The most likely scenario is Mayanot Mayim here means that they were cisterns. They were cisterns of water. Lo'olei regalim, in order to have water for the Olei regalim. V'ani etein lecha 12 mayanot mayim, and I will return these 12 cisterns of water to you. V'im eni notein lecha, if I don't replenish them, hareini notein lecha 12 kikar kesef. I'll give you 12 kikar kesef, which is an exorbitant amount of money. V'kabal ozman, and they set a time by which he had to return the water. Kevin shigiyazman v'lo yadu gishamim. So there came the time, and then nothing fell. There was no rain. He couldn't replace the water that he had borrowed. B'shacharit shalach lo shagarli omayim omaot. This Adon, this non-Jew who had lent him the water, says, water or money? Take your choice. Sheyesh lecha biyadcha, whatever you want. Shalach lo adayin yesh li zman. Nachdim HaMegayon says, day's not over. What are you talking about? So, kol hayom kulo shali. Today belongs to me. I have the entire day to replace this for you. But Tzaraim Shalach Lo, in the afternoon, the Adon sends an Akdima Megaryon, Shagarli, Omaim, Omaot, Sheishli Biyadecha. Send me the water or the money that's mine in your hands. Basically, he knows he's getting the money because there's no water. Shalach Lo, Adain Yeshli Shaot Bayom. He says, I still have time left in the day. Bimincha, in the late afternoon, Shalach Lo, Shagarli, Omaim, Omaot, Sheishli Biyadecha. Send me the water or my money that's in your hands. Again, he knows that he's getting the money. Shalach Lo, Adain Yeshli Shaot Bayom. Says, I still have some time left in the day. Ligleg alav oto adon. That guy laughed at him and says, what are you thinking? I mean, nothing. It's so late in the day. What are you thinking? Amar kol hashana kula lo yaduk shamim. Says, the entire year there hasn't been an ounce of rain. Vachshav yaduk shamim. Now, what do you think? The last 5 minutes of the day, there's going to be rain all of a sudden? So then, this individual, nichnas the beit hamerchatz b'simcha. He goes into the bathhouse, laughing his way in there, waiting to collect his money. He's so excited. Ad shadon nichnas. Nichnas b'simchato lebeit hamerchatz. When he goes into the bathhouse, Nachdim HaMegayon, nichnas lebeit hamikdash. He goes up to the Beit HaMikdash. Shu atzav nitatef. V'amad b'tfilah. This Adon goes in b'simcha, celebrating that he's about to make a ton of money. And at the same time, the contrast is Nachdim HaMegayon going up to the Beit HaMikdash, all upset, wrapped up, and going to daven. Amar lefanav ribono shalom. Goloi v'yadu lefanecha shalo lichvodi asiti. I didn't do this for my honor. V'lo lichvod beit abo, not for my family's honor. Asiti ela lichvodcha asiti. I did it for your honor. Shiu mayim mitzuim l'olei regalim. I supplied water so the people came up to l'olei regal would have something to drink. Miad nitkashu shamayim ba'avim. Immediately the sky turned into cloudy. V'yardu gishamim. Ash nitmalu shtemisrei mayonot mayim. Till it filled up those 12 cisterns with water. V'hotiro. And they were in excess of the amount that he had to return. So now, but that's all happened before this individual leaves the bathhouse. So he's in the bathhouse, he has no idea what comes. He comes out, he sees, oh my gosh. While he's exiting the bathhouse, Nachdim HaMegayon is leaving the Beit HaMikdash. And they bump into each other. Nachdim HaMegayon says, you owe me money now. I gave you back more water than you deserve. Please give me my money. Amar lo, yodei ani shelo hirish HaKadosh Baruch Hu et olamo ela bishvilcha. I know that God only had this storm come in for your benefit. Ela adayin yesh li pitchon pe alecha. He says, but I'm not going to let go. You owe me the money. Sheotzi mimcha et ma'utai. And I'm going to take my money now because shvar shaka achama. The sun already set. V'gishamim b'shuti yardo. And I can claim that the rain happened after sunset, and it was rain. I got double bonus. You're going to pay me. And then it rained into my borot, and it's my rain. Chazar v'nichnas to Beit HaMikdash. Nachdim HaMegayon turns on his heel, heads right back into the Mikdash. Nitatef amad b'tfilah, wraps himself up in daven. V'amar lefanav, ribono shel olam, hoda sheyesh lecha uvim be'olamecha. Make it clear that you have those that are beloved to you in this world. Miyad nitpazru avim. The clouds dispersed, v'zarcha chama, and the sun was shining. Voltosha Amarlo Adon, Ilu lo nikdira chachama, hayali pitkon pe alecha. Had it not been for the fact that the sun burst forth over here, I would have had a claim against you, shotzimim chamotai. But I would have had that opportunity to take my money, but now that the sun's out, I have nothing to say. So that's the sun burst forth. Tana, lo nakdimon shemo, his name is not Nakdimon ben Gurion, ela boni shemo. His name is Boni. He's also mentioned also in the Gemara in Yoma. Boni was an extremely wealthy individual. Obviously, Nakdimon Gurion is also a wealthy individual. So wealthy that the Gemara in Ketubot talks about that every time he walked out in public, they used to put down silk on the ground for him to walk on. And after he left, the Aniyim used to keep the silk. That was his donation to Tzedakah. V'lamini krash shmom Nakdimon. So then why is he called Nakdimon? Shenikdara chama be'avuro. The other gear says, shenikdama chama be'avuro. The sun stopped for him or burst forth for him, meaning that a miracle happened on his behalf. Tan Rabbanan, shlosha nikdama lehem chama bavuran. For three people, the sun did wonderful things or basically stopped. Moshe, Yoshua, v'Nakdimon ben Gurion. Those are the three individuals who the sun stopped for. Peshlamo Nakdimon ben Gurion Gimara. Nakdimon ben Gurion is just the Mesorah, the Gemara that we just read now. Yoshua nami kro. Yoshua we know from the Psukim in Sefer Yoshua dichtiv. Because it says over there in the story where the kings of the Emori, the kings of Canaan, realize that there's a big problem now. Yoshua has just conquered Yericho, and now he's conquered Ai, and he has an alliance with the Givonim. And they're saying, we're in big trouble now. So five of the kings get together. Those five kings in Sefer Yoshua, the king of Yushalayim, the king of Hebron, the king of Yarmut, which is the mountain across the street from my house. There is Yarmut right here in Beit Shemesh. And the king of Lachish and the king of Eglon. They gather together and they attack the Givonim. Probably because they're a weaker individuals with the alliance with Klal Yisrael, and they attack the Givonim. The Givonim call for reinforcement from Klal Yisrael based on their alliance. Yoshua travels overnight up the Gilgal and comes to the defense of the Givonim, and they destroy the five kings of Canaan. He's chasing down the five kings of Canaan. Many miracles on that day in the Azekah, which also is local to this area, Tel Azekah, where the battle of Goliath and David took place. They're being chased all over, and there are these rocks or stones that come down from heaven and destroy them. And then Yoshua is chasing them through Emek Ayalon, that is near where the modern-day Shelavim is. That's an area called Emek Ayalon. And many times you can sit in Emek Ayalon. If you sit in that valley, you can look in the directions and you can understand what Yoshua was looking at. And he says, Shemesh b'Givon Dom v'Areach b'Emek Ayalon, that the sun should stop in the Givon on the western side, and the Areach b'Emek Ayalon, and the moon on the other side, on the eastern side of the sky. V'chtov. And then what does it say afterwards? It says, Hashem listens, and V'idom Hashemesh v'Areach Amad. That's exactly what happens. It stops in order that Yoshua can continue the battle. Remember, in their days, battles only took place during the daytime. As soon as the sun set, the battle was over because you didn't fight at night. There was no way to fight without lights, without night vision. You can't fight at night. So therefore, the battle was about to end, and Yoshua wanted to clean up before the battle ended. He wanted to capture all of them before the battle ended. So he asked Hashem for more time. How does he get more time? He asked him for the sun to stop and the moon to stop. Okay, so we have Nakdimon Gur and we have Yoshua. Since when did the sun stop for Moshe? Amar Rabbi Elazar, Atya Achel Achel. We have a Gzera Shava, an Agadic Gzera Shava. Tivocha, it says here in Dvarim Achel Teit Pachtucho, the guides to Moshe Rabbeinu, it says that I'm going to begin to bring your fear and your name is going to become well known amongst the nations at this point in time when they're doing battle against Sichon and Og. Tivotam, and it says in Yoshua, Achel Godlecha, I'm going to make you great. Meaning that Hashem says to Yoshua, you're going to be great. What's that greatness? Is when the sun stops. So the Achel, that I'm going to make you great. And the Achel of Moshe, there's Gzeres Shava. Rabbi Shua Nachmani Amar, Acha Teit Teit. Tivacha Achel Teit Pach Tucha by Moshe. It says, I'm going to begin to have your fear be felt around the nations. Uktivatam, on that day in Yoshua, when he stops the sun and the moon, it says, V'yom Teit Hashem Et Mori. That Hashem grants the Emori in the hands of Yoshua on that day, so that Tate Tate is a Agadic Gezer Shava again, that says that just like the sun stopped for Yoshua, so too it stopped for Moshe Rabbeinu. Meaning that the idea that Moshe's name will become known to everyone is the same way that Yoshua's name is going to become known to everyone. How does everyone know about Yeshua? Because the sun stopped. That's how everybody knows about it, because everybody saw the sun stop. So too, by Moshe Rabbeinu, when it says that you're going to be well known and everybody's going to fear you, it's for the same reason, because the sun stopped. You can learn it out of the pasuk it says. It says in Devarim, with regards to Moshe, it's the latter half of the pasuk that we quoted before, that pasuk ends, they're going to hear of your name, they're going to tremble and fear from you. They're going to run from you. When does that happen? When the sun stood still for Moshe. Again, they did it before through an agadic gezeirah shava. Over here, Rabbi Yochanan saying is, that's the pashtut of pasuk. How does everybody know about the name of Moshe? How is everybody going to be fearful of Moshe? It has to be an event that's so big that everybody hears about it and everybody sees it. What type of event is that? That's when the sun stops. Similar to what it did in the time of Yeshua. Okay, we'll stop over here.